And, see, we're over here. Is there anyone in the public, I have to do this to be legal, who would like to, give us public comment? Seeing none, Jeff, Kelly, and Ken, we're ready for you.
Three on three?
Yep. This is what I learned from Vern Duncan, so you get all you can at the table at the same time, it saves time.
That's very good. Mr. Chair, Jeff Huntington, Executive Director for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. And for the record, I have Kelly Moore, who oversees the, and coordinates the monitoring program for the Oregon Plan, and works for OEB, and Ken Beerley, Director, Deputy Director of OEB. We can proceed at your pleasure, whether you'd like to do, we're scheduled to do a brief check-in with you on the biennial report that OEB is statutorily obliged to provide the legislature in January of '03. We have, a little bit to talk about on that, and we also are here to do a check-in on the monitoring program. Either order is fine with us.
Whatever pleases you.
Why don't we do a quick review of the biennial report for the record? Ken Beerley with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Posted on the, easels are typical pages of the light that, will be appearing in the biennial report where we are reporting, the conditions and the restoration activities taking place in each basin in the state. And this is a follow-up to the presentation by Jay Nicholas in May. Unfortunately, Jay is quite ill right now and couldn't be here today. But we have been working on the format and layout of the biennial report. And one element that we think is extremely important for this biennial report will be a consistent format in which we display restoration data and restoration investment in these two-page spreads for each basin. And we have gone through a deliberative effort trying to figure out what set of basins we ought to use, and have decided that the 15 basins that are, that we will be using are most meaningful for the Oregon Plan purposes. It's similar to, federal basin delineation, except that we divide, the Southwest, coastal area, divide the Rogue and the Umpqua separately from, that large spatial area from the, Coos Coquille and South Coastal frontage drainages. So we have three basins instead of one in that specific area. What we've tried to illustrate in these, the basin format is the, where the investments have occurred, how much has been invested, who has been investing, and then what are the stressors they're trying to address. And then not just reporting OEB's investments, but reporting the investment by other programs where we have data. And we're trying to make sure that we have data from some of the federal partners. We're hoping to have that by the time we develop a final report. What the handout that was provided you shows the appendix, I mean the index to the draft report as attachment A, and it shows that we would, what we would do in this report is key from the basin reports, the 15 basins, we would then describe what some of the summarize statewide what some of the voluntary actions by Oregonians are, what some of the agency actions, the monitoring efforts that are going on, and the Science Foundation. And then as the Senate Bill 945 requires of us, we will be developing some recommendations for improving the Oregon Plan. We've been trying to develop this report not just by staff at OEB. We've had a fairly significant public involvement effort where we've contacted specific people in each part of the state to talk to them individually, get their ideas about what are important issues in the basin, what are important accomplishments, and what are some of the issues that haven't been dealt with in the basin. So we will be trying to summarize that from both a public involvement process as well as talking with staff and local groups throughout the state. We expect to have the report in final form in late November, early December, and we're looking forward to just bringing you a final report at that time. We'd be glad to answer any questions you have. In the handout, you will look at, it turned out quite dark. Attachment B shows the basins that we would be reporting on, and attachment C shows the basin layouts and has it annotated what's attempted to be described in each one of those places on the basin layout.
Before we move on, I need to declare that we have a quorum for our subcommittee, as opposed to a sub of a sub. Can I see this report is due by January 15th?
Yes, it is.
Will there be aspects of this report that the legislature can use to help prioritize funding?
There will be aspects of this report, and Jeff will help me out here, I'm sure, that will help us to identify where there are differences between public perception of what are important restoration priorities or restoration issues and where our investments are. That will help us. We have started on a separate process to develop restoration priorities separate from the biennial report, which we won't have sufficient accomplishment to report on this biennium other than the fact that the board has authorized that to be started at their last board meeting in John Day in September, and we expect to have regional priorities established over the next year or so. And again, establishing priorities basin by basin using the same basin structure as we've got here.
Mr. Chair, I'll add on in response to your question. I think that what the report won't do will suggest that more money is needed for a particular TMDL program for DEQ or something like that, but it will, I think, identify in some of these boxes where there are challenges in a particular geographic area. If there's a hurdle to actually getting some key things accomplished in a particular part of the state, we hope to highlight that so that it can be used as a basis for the substantive and the appropriations committees to have discussions with folks about how to make progress there. And frankly, I think we worked a lot on the template for this to provide a structure that will give us that ability to do a long-term tracking of some key indicators of how implementation's going. But maybe the biggest thing about this report is I think it'll help turn our discussion from being about programmatic things, the Forest Practices Act, water quality, the statewide program for Senate Bill 1010, into talking about what's working and what's not and what the key challenges are in a particular piece of geography in the state. So when we talk about Oregon Plan, we can talk about how it's going in the Umpqua or how it's going in the John Day, and there are going to be differences, and there are differences. There are differences in where the percentage of money is that's being invested, whether it's coming from the private sector or the public sector. There are differences in the challenges for water quality issues facing different basins, and I think that's the place that it will help frame discussion for the legislative committees.
Okay, well, appreciate that, Jeff. It's no secret that we're going to have some severe fiscal problems. I think it's coming budget session, and I think we're going to have to be pretty creative on how we maintain our programs. And I'm concerned that we maintain the infrastructure and the technical people that can keep the programs going. And so this might be outside the realm of this biennial report.
Actually, one of the things we've heard consistently in talking to people around the basin is that they need local technical assistance, local technical capability. And we've heard that in a variety of different terms, but that common theme we've heard in every basin where we've talked to the public about what are your needs to continue your effort, and they say we need somebody that has the responsibility to help us identify projects and get those projects in the ground. And that will be in the report.
That will be helpful, but I think we're going to have to really sit down and search our souls as how we're going to get this accomplished with that overlap in the most efficient way we could possibly do it.
I agree, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen, did you have a comment?
Just a quick question. Some of this is part of the had a fear having to do with the John Day Basin. Am I implying correctly that there therefore is some 1.78 million plus or minus some change, total monies spent by OWEB on the John Day Basin, bottom right-hand corner?
The way we've described this is, and the way the information that we have, the bottom right-hand corner is that during the time period 2000-2001, there's been about $1.7 million that has been completed and reported to us. That's not OWEB money alone. That's other folks' funds. And if you look at...
That could include in-kind.
That includes in-kind, and that is broken down by in a chart that will show up over here that will show how much is OWEB, how much is private industrial forest landowners, how much is federal money. So we've tried to show what's been completed, and then we've tried to show what the source of those funds are.
Okay.
Aside from that, in the investments portion here on the back, we specifically articulate where the OWEB funds for this biennium have gone in that basin. And we have this statewide for the statewide figures, but we will have it for each basin, how much money and where it went within each basin from of OWEB funds.
And one of the things we're trying to do is for you to be able to open up and on a two-page spread see what you see in the John Day left and right. And each basin will have the same layout, the same place. So you can go to the same place on the page and you can compare the investments of the private sector forest industry in restoration activities in John Day versus the investment they've been making in the North Coast, or what the mixture of funds are and how much private matches has been coming in versus public dollars, or what the spread is of listed fish stocks, whatever. It's a little hard when it's on a duplex page, but that's what we're shooting for.
Jeff, I have to ask you, I would assume since some basins have been at this game quite a while now, and some of them 2, 3, 4 years, maybe some just starting out. That's going to vary a lot, isn't it?
It varies a lot in dollar amounts. It varies a lot in who the primary contributor of funding is. And some basins, BPA is on top. Some basins, it's the private sector is reporting more of an investment in the public sector in restoration activities. In places, OWEB is dominating the picture. It varies a lot, and that's part of the purpose of this is I've been saying since I've been at OWEB that one of the things I see with the Oregon Plan is that we have to start talking about how it's going in different parts of the state and cut loose our discussions from a statewide program level all the time to be able to say, well, what's working and what isn't here, and it's okay if we focus on the critical linkages here. They don't have to be the same things that we focus on in the other part of the state. Because this has to be you know, driven by what makes sense in the basin, and that's part of what we're trying to do in the formatting of this.
Do you have any good examples of where one part of the state has taught another part of the state through exactly that kind of process?
There's actually been some very good cross fertilization. Some of the early innovators, the Coquille watershed that Senator Messerly is quite familiar with, has made presentations in other parts of the state to talk about how they organized, how they established priorities, what they did, and I've seen their tracks in different parts of the state. The Grand Ronde Model Watershed has made similar efforts in the Baker Powder Basin, in the further south into the Harney Malheur Basin. So there's been a lot of learning among the different groups. We have through OWEB have organized get-togethers with watershed councils regionally for them to interact, to kind of learn from one another about what's going on and how they can do things differently.
And it's not just watershed groups either. I think the Senate Bill 1010 process and the DEQ TMDL development process are very geographically oriented, and as they've gone to different parts of the state, they've picked up ideas by working in one part of the state that have worked to address specific non-point issues, pollution issues, and woven those into some of those local plans. So that's the essence, of, I think, of the implementation of the Oregon Plan, is picking up those threads and moving them around.
just follow up.
Yeah, follow up. Have they also taught each other with regard to finding private money, private participation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I think so. I think that project money has, we see a lot more of an influx of different types of project money coming to the table now than probably 10 years ago. The private sector in different parts of the state are very engaged in investing money on the lands they're managing, and engaging councils in doing that. It comes in a lot of different forms. We have some councils that are very engaged in seeking private grants from foundations, but it takes a certain amount of infrastructure and sophistication to actually to play in that arena, if you will, and that's a lot to ask of local citizen groups that are 100% voluntary. So OWEB is trying to help with that a little bit, but the private foundation money is probably the last to come in and the least that we're seeing.
Mr. Chair, I thought I had one follow-up, but his answer generated another question.
Shoot.
Okay. I'm just wondering, when you're talking about all of this interplay, if there's some kind of tax advantage. I mean, you when you were answering the question, you said that, you know, somebody who's got a chunk of land or whatever will put private money into, you know, the local group. Why don't they just do it themselves and not give it to the group? I mean, is there a tax benefit to doing that or working that way? Or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, we see it mostly in the form of working collaboratively with a group, but investing the money in their own land that they're managing, but using watershed councils as also a vehicle to do work and seek match money from public sources and get involved in the project.
Okay.
Senator,
pretty clever.
I can speak from experience just this past summer that it's an in-kind contribution, and usually with technical support, or in some cases, in our case, the Watershed Council helped us purchase some culverts, and we installed them and contoured the road, did the whole thing ourselves. So it's that kind of participation you're seeing mostly, isn't it?
Largely. And Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, we're seeing right now on average about $3 of private money invested for every dollar of public money that we're putting into the watershed restoration projects. So it's a substantial leveraging that goes on. And we have University of Oregon look at this, and they tell us that it's probably a multiplier effect in the local economy of somewhere between a dollar to a dollar 65. For every dollar of money that's invested in one of these projects, it generates another dollar to a dollar 65 cents in additional expenditures in the local economy, over 80% of which stays in the county where it's spent, and 90-some percent stays in the state. So it really is, as you talk about these investments of public and private dollars and the matching and the multiplier effect, a fairly substantial economic vehicle for sustaining some of the local economies and keeping a working landscape in place in rural communities in particular.
I think that's an important point, Mr. Chair. I mean, we had to dig a while, but the diamond was just uncovered here. I mean, a dollar of public money leveraging $3 of private money. And that's a significant thing. I'd lead with that every time.
Any other comments or questions? Mr. Bailey? Jeff? Does that complete your presentation on the...
Thank you very much. On the biennial report, yes.
Okay. Monitoring. We're also here to check in with you as our oversight committee on the monitoring program. Last session, Senate Bill 945 charged OWEB with taking hold of the Oregon Plan monitoring efforts and forming them into a more strategic and cohesive program. This translates into building a long-term strategy for monitoring that the IMST and the agencies, both federal and state and local partners, agree to and have bought into. It translates into identifying what is being done now in terms of different disparate monitoring programs and efforts around the state and comparing that to what needs to be done in order to implement a more cohesive long-term approach. And then for OWEB, it means for us acting as an advocate to reshape what's being done now, those current efforts, and to fill the gaps so that Oregon has a fully integrated effort that we can actually both physically and functionally maintain over the long term, because the key here is for us to track the same indicators over time so that we get a long-term view of whether our efforts, all these investments we're talking about, the regulatory programs, are producing the effects that we've predicted and desire. And that's the key, and it's particularly the key if we're to link with the Federal Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act and some of those other programs. Kelly Moore was transferred from the governor's office to OEB as part of Senate Bill 945 to lead, to design and lead that coordination effort. And that is what OEB's role is in this. It is to lead and coordinate and help help just nurture this along and provide a structure for the agencies and the partners that are actually doing the monitoring that's associated with their individual programs, but which has the capacity to be built into something bigger than just those individual programs. And so Kelly's here to talk to you a little bit about what we've done so far and where we're headed with it.
Chairman Messer, members of the committee, last time I was here was last January, and we talked about the development of this monitoring strategy that OEB has been charged with implementing. I'd like to give you an update on that, and that's why I handed out two things to you. One was a letter from the IMST to me reviewing a draft of the monitoring strategy, and the other is this yellow sheet, which sort of encapsulates the message behind the strategy. We have made significant progress since I last talked to you. We've had this endorsement by the IMST that Jeff mentioned. We've taken the strategy to the Oregon Plan core team and to the Natural Resources Cabinet for them to sign off on, as well as the OEB board, and that occurred, the endorsement by the OEB board was in May board meeting. So we have this thing nailed down as a framework for how we're going to proceed. Now the work that we need to continue is to how to implement this statewide and carry the work that we've begun primarily on the coast to the rest of the state. One thing Jeff mentioned, and it touched on two things, I wanted to talk to the committee about this, and maybe we'll have some follow-up, but talk about leveraging local dollars and other kinds of investment. Right now, we're in the process of trying to leverage federal dollars, particularly Bonneville dollars, to help implement the Oregon Plan approach throughout Oregon and the rest of the region. And that's where we've had a leg up on other entities in the region. Because of the work that's been implemented on the coast over the last 5 years, we can demonstrate our ability to track trends effectively, to look at changes in fish populations, look at changes in stream quality and water quality, in a way that's scientifically credible. And that's a done deal. We recently, in fact, last week, just held a workshop for about 120 people around the region where we demonstrated the results of monitoring, not just our plan for monitoring or our strategy, but how the data is being used. And it's key for us because just like in 2001, where NIMS used the data from the Klamath Mountain province to not list Klamath Mountain steelhead, we want to keep the information we're collecting in front of the federal regulatory agencies so they'll use it. But we also want to keep it in front of those who are doing recovery planning so that basically we proceed in a logical way. We're using good information. We recognize that there's a lot of data collected and it's not all moving together. So the coordination role for OEB is fairly key to try to make that happen. The main project, the monitoring activities of the state agencies and some of the federal agencies are well integrated as a result of the work of the Oregon Plan and the monitoring team, which is comprised of state and federal agencies. What we've discovered, however, is there's hundreds of other little monitoring projects out there by states, by local agency districts, by federal folks, by researchers. It's sort of an untapped resource that we want to bring in. What we've developed is a mechanism to do that. This comes in under the coordination role, but we have some backup for that. One thing we were able to accomplish working with ODFW and with what's now called NOAA Fisheries, not NIMS anymore, is to develop a tracking system for research in the region. And while I would hesitate to call it a streamlined permit system, because I think that's an oxymoron, we do have the ability now to track the projects that sample fish, to look at habitat that may affect them through the 4D rule. So we have a much better idea of what's going on in the region than we had in the past. And unfortunately, it's a rather thick document detailing study after study throughout the state, federal monies, university monies. We know where the OEB money is going, that we need to bring together in a more cohesive way. Now, not everything has to be coordinated, but there's a potential out there to use better information and be more efficient. So that's, I think that's going to be a lot of our focus in the next year or so. Other things we've done is to ensure is the sampling approach that we're using has been exposed to regional review teams. We see the IMST letter and their endorsement for the approach. But also we've dealt with the Power Planning Council, with NIMS, or NOAA Fisheries in Seattle, and the work they're doing in the Columbia Basin, and other entities. We think that we have the design we need to track large-scale trends over the region. At this workshop, we had about 120 people, as I mentioned, and one of the things that there was agreement on was that if we describe, say, 15 or 18 or 20 basins in Oregon, we've begun to draw those circles, that's the scale where we should begin to characterize the situation. And it is a hierarchy. You start with individual projects. You know, if someone replaces a culvert, you want to go back and ensure that it does have fish passage. You can do that systematically so you don't have to measure every culvert. If there's a suite of projects in a region, say in-stream work by a timber owner or the work that is done cooperatively and funded through OWEB, you want to know what's going to happen in a whole river system, right on up to the state. And so we have this hierarchy of tracking that we need to implement. Connecting those pieces is a lot of work, and we think we have an approach that's going to help us get there. Another thing that happened in this workshop was we had made an attempt to sort of prioritize among some of the big issues out there for monitoring. And although it's not a statistical sample, we did find that this idea that we need these broad-scale assessments, this is the information that you get reported to NIMS so they can make new decisions about whether to list or delist species. That received high approval. Effectiveness monitoring, the accountability, also high. Support for local groups was also about the same. And then also a number of people pointed out that continued research into hatchery effects and how are we really going to deal with the whole hatchery issue is part of the overall Oregon plan approach. So there's a good agreement of where we need to go. We have a pathway on a number of these. We need to work out a lot more of how we really can do effectiveness monitoring. The charts you see here and the parts of the biennial report are a critical first step. Know where the investments were made. Put them on the map on the ground where you can see how they work together and begin to have an effect. If you look at the North Coast map and you see that, you know, we've been working there a little longer than other places. North Coast, the Coos, the Grand Rhine, and the Northeast Oregon, and we've been operating the longest. They have more dots than the John Day, the parts of the Willamette and other places. But we should be seeing some changes occur. And the fish data and the stream data is beginning to track with these investments. It's not something you're going to take to the bank right now, but it's an argument that we're prepared to make as we continue to proceed with the Oregon plan. And it's our job at OWEB to make sure that we take advantage of the information that's collected, we support local groups, and we are a place where people can rely upon accurate information about what's going on. I think I'll stop there and see if there's questions.
Kelly, Jeff, or somebody, help me get to the big picture here. Of all the monitoring that's done at the state, and you mentioned several different entities for down to the local level that does certain aspects of monitoring, sometimes on a volunteer basis. But in the big picture, for instance, how much of the total monitoring is done through OWEB's funding? How much is done through a different state department? Fish and Wildlife, Forestry, Ag, how much is done by the feds and then down to the watershed and the local level. I guess what I'm concerned about is there duplication there and who's responsible for that information? And Kelly, you brought up a great point, is that once we get that information, is it compatible in a database that, such as we're trying to do with the Natural Resource Institute, get it in one form so that you can pull it up on a website and it's all in one location as much as possible.
In terms of necessarily, we've continued to press for compatibility of the protocols and the methods that people use so that if they go out and put a stream sensor in a stream, that the information they collect can be used and shared and validated for the different reasons it might approach, not just for our status and trends monitoring, but obviously for things like calibrating models of how temperature works in streams, broader scale models. That's been done. It's pretty well followed. OWEB has supported development of protocols for monitoring riparian plantings, and we have also developing protocols for how you really characterize riparian vegetation, but not just in forested areas but across the state. So protocol development fits in strongly what we're trying to do. It's actually one of the strategies, the whole strategy devoted to that strategy seven, which basically says you've got to have this in order to make it work, especially when you're not one agency that controls the whole program. Your agency is trying to coordinate.
So, Kelly, is some of the OWEB monitoring replacing what some of the other agencies or other entities were doing at one point?
No, OWEB's not doing any direct monitoring other than the grants that are given to local groups. And it's creating a different scale, a higher resolution, so that people can get more feedback about how their own projects are working. It's kind of hard to say who's paying for what, because a lot, as we, with the fund shifts, a lot of state agency monitoring efforts are moving through OWEB now, but I wouldn't call them OWEB programs or structured.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just take us up to that 40,000-foot level and go back to something you asked earlier about, well, how is this possibly going to be useful in the session and setting policies and budgets? You know, the honest answer is that there probably is some amount of duplication of efforts out there in what's being looked at and why. And it's probably also true that there are a lot of important data collection activities going on and monitoring efforts going on that are associated with singular program desires and objectives that are traditionally associated with a long-running natural resource program effort, whether it's at a university or at a local level or at a state level or federal level. The question is, if we are going to be moving into a resource-short era, how do we make sure that what is being collected to support individual program interests and efforts can be used to, for a broader purpose? That and knitted together with somebody else's data, and if and how can we modify slightly some of these individual program efforts so that they are knitted together to support the broader effort? And I hope that what we will be in a position to discuss after the first of the year is, if you want to have a monitoring program that is supporting broad objectives of the Oregon plan and how Oregon is going to relate to federal listings and how we're going to track long-term trends in our efforts and our investments, then here are the basic types of monitoring activities and data that are really key to accomplishing that. And being able to look at what that set is versus some of what is going on and is proposed and in the private and the public sector, and see what the overlap is and see what the overlap isn't. By definition as well. And that should put us in a position to have a lot more frank discussion about what is really needs to be in the box, because it's important to more than just a singular program. It's important to a broad effort. And because I don't think we've ever really had that discussion before in the context of monitoring. And frankly, I'm not sure, I can't say this with all certainty, but Oregon sure seems to be a long ways further down the road in doing this than any place else that's engaged in a recovery effort.
Jeff, you just brought up a point that I'd forgotten about for a while, but I think it really is becoming more valid all the time. And that is that I think Oregon has been negligent in the fact that we don't have any one specific office in the state that I'm aware of that is charged with the direct coordination with the federal agencies to monitor, but to manage the delisting. Now, and I've always felt that it should come out of the governor's office, one individual who is the direct contact and kind of the coordinator for the whole state. And what I'm hearing you say is that it is a kind of a mixed bag. Your agency has some responsibility. The OD&W has some responsibilities, I guess, specific to species. The Department of Fish and Wildlife has some responsibility just because of some of the habitats that they specifically deal with. But as far as one spokesperson that is the contact for the NIMS, I don't think we're there yet.
Mr. Chair, the governor's administration has had a salmon advisor. And that person has served under the Natural Resource Advisor for about 6 years, and it is through the governor's office that the Oregon Plan core team of agencies that are responding to the listings meet and coordinate activities. And I always look to, Roy Hemingway and before Neil Conan, as that spokesman for dealing directly with National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA Fisheries. As of the passage of Senate Bill 945, I think for the first time, the legislature in statute very clearly identified that OWEB is charged with being the voice of working with the IMST to develop a strategy and to coordinate the monitoring piece. And Senate Bill 946 put the responsibility for the coordination of data and trying to build the compatibility of data sets in OWEB's portfolio, and I think we're appearing before you maybe on your next agenda to discuss that as part of your oversight of our agency. But in terms of a straight spokesman for addressing issues with the federal government, we've got a lot of different agency programs that intersect with the listings, but the governor's salmon advisor, at least in this administration, is it. I don't know where the next administration will go, obviously.
Okay. Any questions, comments from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Committee, we're going to stand at ease for just a second while we prepare for the next agenda item. And Patricia and we have her, Jason, if you'd like to come up and get prepared.